Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Politics Podcast. Another Labour MP has resigned. Tristram Hunt has stood down as MP for a stroke on Trent. Quite a decent Labour seat, but also with a seat with one of the largest Brexit majorities in the country. So, what happens next? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by my colleague James Forsyth and former Labour adviser Aisha Hazarika to discuss. Now, James, you know Tristram pretty well. We know he's been unhappy with Jeremy Corbyn's leadership for some time. Should we have seen this coming?
I think for Tristram Hunt, it's a combination of unhappiness with Jeremy Corbyn's leadership and the likelihood of facing a re-selection battle because of boundary changes, reducing the number of seats in Stoke. But then added on top of that, being director of the V&A for a job that he's off to go and do is pretty much Tristram Hunt's dream job. And we are now beginning to see a pattern here, which is that when moderate Labour MPs are offered good jobs, they aren't bothering to hang around until 2020. They're going now. Jamie Reid, in the course of a Copeland by-election, he is off to go back to his old job at Sellafield. I think this is slightly different in that this job, this V&A job, Tristram Hunt couldn't have asked them to wait 3.5 years to appoint him.
So, Aisha, we've now had two Labour MPs quit, not out of principle, not out of any political ambition, but because they've been offered a better job elsewhere. Is this unusual, and is this a sign of a party that's falling apart, do you think?
Well, it's certainly a very, very worrying sign for the party. I would say that actually there is principle involved. Both the MPs, Jamie Reid and Tristram Hunt, are from the moderate wing of the party, and they have found themselves consistently at odds with Jeremy Corbyn and the leadership. So I think it's the combination of A, getting a good job, but also the realisation that the Labour Party is unlikely to be a party of power for a very, very long time. And they're in a political structure which doesn't even acknowledge or listen to their views. There is no feeling from their point of view that they can be part of a conversation or help shape a policy agenda that will get us back into power. So I think it is sort of ideological as well as a good career opportunity.
But Aisha, I mean, the Labour Party has been here before. In 1983, there were, you know, young Tony Blair was in the Labour Party, John Reid, all the guys who went on to form New Labour, faced a situation almost as depressing as this, but they weren't resigning back in the early 80s to take better jobs. So what's changed now?
Well, look, I mean, I think there will be mixed views across the Labour family about this. And I think you're right. There will be some people that say, well, hang on a minute. Politics is about being in it for the long haul. And, you know, lots of the politicians I've worked for example, my old boss, Harriet Harman, used to tell me that through the 80s, they very much despaired, but they dug in. But some politicians back in the 80s also did leave to go off and do other things or kept their outside interests going to a far greater degree than MPs do now. But I think it's a bigger sign that there is a group of MPs in the Labour Party, particularly the sort of younger ones in their 40s, who, when they came into Parliament, I think they thought that they had a good chance of actually being in power at some point. And because that seems very unlikely, they want to get out now. Now, you can argue that that's not a good or principled thing, but I think that's what a lot of people feel like in the Labour Party. And I think a lot of the POP sense a frustration that the leadership doesn't want to work with them to try and put the party back on a footing where it could win power. So I think that is the frustration. Look, there are some people that are absolutely going to think, look, these guys are flouncing off because the going is getting tough. But I think from their point of view, a lot of them have families, a lot of them are thinking about their, you know, what difference they can make to the world. And they don't feel they can make a huge difference to the world in a Labour Party, which is basically going downhill.
Now, James, do you think we could expect more such resignations, more Labour MPs who've suddenly been given a very compelling opportunity selling detergent in Eastern Europe and off they go?
I certainly think that what you're going to see is a large number of Labour MPs, if they're offered good jobs, they are going to take them now. I think one of the crucial differences with the 80s is in the 80s, the left never got control of the party. The left now has control of the party in the form of Jeremy Corbyn, which makes it a different ballgame. I think also you see some kind of mischievous talk from the Tories, from the Tory culture minister, Matt Hancock, saying, look, there are lots of these jobs for people of all persuasions who've got things to contribute. So I think you will see a bit of mischief making on that front. Lots of these jobs are government appointments. But I think there is an issue here, which is that these Labour MPs, they just don't think that the party has any realistic prospects of getting into government anytime soon, or even becoming a sane political opposition again anytime soon. And so when other jobs are coming along, they're taking them.
Aisha, at what point would you say the Labour Party will look more like it's disintegrating than it's having a bad spell? I mean, would it take, I don't know, 5 resignations? Would it take a formal split? I guess if the party was going to split, if Tristram Hunt and Jamie Reid were going to form a new wing, if they're going to do an SDP, that's what they would have done. And they haven't done this. And I assume they're just going off to pursue private interests instead.
That's right. The party is absolutely not going to split because the moderates don't have a leader or a platform or, quite frankly, the energy or the organisational skills to set up a kind of another party. I mean, the moderates couldn't even organise a very good coup last year. So I think the idea of them organising another party is for the birds. Look, I mean, I've had a lot of MPs contact me this morning, a lot of Labour MPs, and I think people are feeling quite spooked, but I think we will see another view, but I don't think it will be enough to sort of say, look, the Labour Party is now formally split. But it's as James said, the keys to the machine are now in the hands of the far left. The party is not about looking out to the public. It's about having a big internal row and trying to assert dominance over things like the NEC and, you know, how the party rule book works. The big battle that people are focused on in the party is the John McDonnell amendment, where he wants to have anyone should only seek 5% of support from the PLP to put themselves forward to be the next leader. So the party, in a way, I think inside will say, well, you know, that's Tristram, that's Jamie. They never liked Jeremy Corbyn. They're of the right of the party. They're career politicians. No great loss to them. Let's focus on the prize, which is succession planning for after Jeremy Corbyn. How do we make sure that another far left leader, you know, comes in? How can we sort of keep that culture going? And the other thing I think that a lot of MPs will be feeling the heat on is the threat of deselection themselves. Lots of MPs I speak to are fighting, you know, sort of weekly battles on their own patch from within the Labour Party in terms of threats of deselection. So it's a party which is internally very, very divided. And that is, you know, does not make for a happy place.
James, Tristram's majority is about 5,000. That's about double that of Jamie Reid and Copeland. But both of them were in seats that perhaps would have been abolished in the next boundary review. So you could argue that they were jumping not because they thought the Labour Party is going in the wrong direction, because they didn't think their seat would exist at the next election. But both seats are obviously pro-Brexit as well. So how do you think that will colour the by-election campaign? Who will Labour be able to find to stand for Stoke, which is about 70% Brexit?
Labour's problem right now actually mirrors the Labour problem in Scotland, which is a constitutional question is now the dominant issue in British politics. You know, what should Brexit look like? And Labour are stuck in the middle with nothing to say. It is quite clear that if you want to somehow thwart the referendum result, the Liberal Democrats, the Lib Dems are your party. They are the party that are explicitly committed to the softest possible Brexit and trying to keep Britain in the EU, if at all possible. And on the other hand, you have the Tories, who are in government, doing Brexit. And then you have UKIP, who want Brexit done yesterday. Where Labour fit in is not quite clear. You know, as we saw on Tuesday, when we heard big drum roll, Jeremy Corbyn was going to come back and say that he was no longer wedded to free movement. And he came back and said, yes, we're no longer wedded to free movement, but we're not wedded to free movement either. I mean, Labour are in a mess about what they think on Brexit. I think one of the things to watch for is UKIP are second in this seat. If they can win, I think that will spook quite a lot of Labour MPs in Leave seats. Now, I mean, that you can't be sure that UKIP will take opportunities. They've not they are not a by-election machine in the way that the Liberal Democrats were back in their heyday. So we can't be certain of all this, but it's certainly going to be a difficult battle for Labour. And I think there is this point, which is, if the boundary changes get through the House of Commons, I think we will see more Labour MPs going, because that will make it, boundary changes will make it much easier for Labour MPs to get deselected. And I think that may, lots of people will think, well, I'm not going to stick around to let the momentum lot parade my scalp around the town square. I'm going to jump before I get pushed.
Now, Aisha, the Conservatives are optimistic about winning Copeland's. They were second there, and UKIP weren't really anywhere. But in Stoke, the Tories and UKIP are pretty much even at the last election, with about 22% of the vote each. Labour got 40%. So, you know, this ought to be far easier to win for the Labour Party, shouldn't it?
It should under normal circumstances, but I think James Wright, in a post-Brexit world, that kind of that disrupts all the norms. I think as well, because Tristram was not Stoke born and bred, for example,
that's putting it mildly.
Jamie, in the way that, let's say, Jamie Reid, you know, is
was Cumbria,
that will add, that will add like another kind of interesting dimension to it as well. But I think the bigger thing as well here is it's. I think in terms of the post-Brexit stuff, it's interesting. Last night in Sunderland, there was a Labour council by-election. And of course, Sunderland was very, very much voting to leave. And the Liberal Democrats won with a huge majority in a very pro-Brexit area. So it's quite, you know, I think we need to, it's going to be interesting to see how things shape down. I think in Copeland, from what people are telling me, the NHS is looming as a very, very big issue in Copeland. So I think that will put more pressure on the Conservatives. Again, I think Jamie Reid was somebody who was quite popular, seen as a sort of important kind of local figure. So I think he may have some positive incumbency. Stoke's going to be very different from that. And it will be interesting to see how well UKIP can organise themselves. That will be the big test for UKIP in Stoke.
So, James, we'll find out with these two elections, or rather we'll be given more of an indication of just how important Brexit is and positions in the EU are and to the extent to which they will cross over into party political affiliation.
Yeah, I think one other thing, though, to watch out for is, in these by-elections, it is quite clear that you are not making Jeremy Corbyn Prime Minister.
Mm.
So I think there is a danger that if Labour hold these seats, if people say, oh, look, it's all got up, you know, don't believe the polls, don't believe that there is this effect, you know, it's not going to be the wipeout for people that Labour think. But, you know, it is an important point, which is no one in Copeland thinks that if they vote in a Labour MP, you're going to find nuclear power shut down because Jeremy Corbyn is suddenly Prime Minister. A general election is different like that. And so I think it is worth noting that these by-election results might actually not really reveal the real state of play for Labour.
Well, Aisha and James, thank you very much. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store, and to the magazine itself from just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks for listening.